Hi, and welcome to ArtCast. I'm Denny Boynton, your host, and today I'm back in the fishbowl at TechEd Developer 2008, and Brian Noyce is my guest. Welcome, Brian.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining me in the fishbowl. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It. I appreciate it. Before we get started talking about the subject for today, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do?
Sure. I'm a consultant with iDesign. We're a .NET architecture and design consulting and training company. Do more consulting than training, but somewhere around a 50-50 mix there.
Mm-hmm.
And do a fair amount of writing and speaking, mostly smart client-focused publishing. And that's about it.
Okay. All right. Very good. Now, you've done 6 talks at TechEd this week.
Yes.
And you've got how many left?
Well, six total. I've done two so far, one today, and then three tomorrow.
Oh,
so.
Three tomorrow. Okay, yeah. So a light day for you on Friday.
Yeah, I'm ramping up there just
Friday.
To
toward the end of the week.
Peak the stress at the end of the week.
Well, one of the talks that you're doing this week is focusing on picking the right client technology for a project is basically what it comes down to. And this is an area that I really enjoy talking about, because I think there's a lot of things that have happened wrong with this particular, you know, type of scenario in the past and some things. So let's start off by talking about one thing I've noticed is that in general, teams tend to pick the client technology they're going to use, whether it's web, or a rich client. They tend to pick it based on the skill set of the team. And as an architect, that really kind of, I go, ugh, that feels kind of yucky to
right.
me, really. You know, because you're making decisions not on technology. How does that, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you see that as well?
Yeah, and I wouldn't limit it to the client space either. I mean, you could say the same thing about, you know, picking a data access technology various, how you're going to architect your application. People do tend to get kind of mired down in their existing way of doing things.
Yep.
So that certainly becomes a factor in selecting the client technology.
Mm-hmm.
But I see a lot of other factors there.
Okay.
You know, that is certainly one, that the team experience, and that not only helps them sort of choose a default, but it also is something they really should be backing away from and using as one of their primary factors of where they should go next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other big factors are just sort of a bias within the company. I still see we hit a lot of customers. We typically do short engagements, so we mm-hmm. see a broad spectrum of the industry. And there is still a big predisposition towards web apps because of the past pains of smart client deployment.
Okay.
You know, before we ever started calling it smart client,
so
thick client, fat client.
There's a perception to overcome there still.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
even though we have newer technologies with ClickWants and, you know, even Windows installer technology's gotten easier and easier over the years, you know, there's still that baggage there that they're just concerned that if I do the smart client route, you're going to have to install something on the client. It's going to break my other apps, and I can't tolerate that, so I got to go with a web app.
Yeah.
I mean, I even had a customer, they were literally building an app where I always go in and say, okay, so who are your users? How many are there? 5. There's 5 people. We have 5 people working at these operations test stations. How many, you know, when the company grows, big growth, you know, your largest possible anticipated growth, how big could it be? Maybe 10 at the tops. And what are you going to build? Well, it's got to be a web app.
A web app, yeah.
It's like, so they're all sitting side by side at operation, you know, at workstations that you control, actually doing a lot of heads down data kind of interaction,
mm-hmm.
but you want to make it a web app. And
absolutely,
it's like,
yeah.
Why? Well, because our management will never buy doing anything but a web app because they think it's too hard to deploy clients.
Yep.
It's like, they're all right there side by side.
Exactly.
How hard can it be?
Yeah, right. Well, and if you're talking, you're talking about 5 workstations, you believe this, in a prior job that I had, I actually did a code review on a web application because it was having performance problems.
Right.
I had one user. It was built specifically for one user, and,
yep.
I said, why? So the problem is that you're running, you know, you're having massive amounts of data with no local caching capability.
Right.
So every time you do this, you're making trips out over the wire. Why would you do that as a web app? And they said, because it's easy for me to deploy.
Yep.
And I just, you know, at that point, you really have to say, oh, we need to take a fundamental step backwards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And I mean, the problem's just getting worse because the choices are blossoming.
Yeah.
So, you know, before, pretty much boiled down to, if you were in a C++ world, you were going to build an MFC app if it was smart client-ish.
Mm-hmm.
If you were in the VB world, they were VB6 apps, and that was kind of all there was. And, you know, now it's Windows Forms, it's WPF, it's Silverlight, it's SharePoint, it's classic ASP, it's ASP.NET. ASP.NET with Ajax, you know, the list goes on and on, and trying to choose what is the appropriate client for our user. Mm-hmm. The problem is, like you say, usually they don't think of it in terms of the user. They think of it in terms of their team experience, what's the corporate predisposition towards,
right,
you know, what they know, which is probably antiquated at, mm-hmm, at the time. And so really getting people to back up and say, okay, you know, what are the capabilities of each technology? What is it we're trying to accomplish? What are our users? What's the deployment environment is certainly a big consideration, you know, and taking all these things and kind of weighing them and looking at what are the pros and cons of each one of those and how do those map to those,
right,
overall requirements,
yeah,
instead of just those driving factors that tend to predispose them towards a solution.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because another trend that I see in this is a lot of times operational groups within an organization can be the ones dictating an application architecture because we won't support that on the desktop.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen that where I've actually had people say, I wanted to build this as a Windows, as a WinForm client. It just seemed to make sense to me, and it was going to be really easy for me to do that, but the operations guy said they wouldn't deploy it for,
right,
me because they didn't know how to support that on the desktop.
Well, and you know, that was a big focus of the ClickOnce team when they were developing ClickOnce was trying to overcome that, and unfortunately it worked against the technology because they were so focused on that they put a lot of really stringent security requirements on what you're allowed to do to an application after it's been published.
Mm-hmm.
With those folks in mind, saying, well, the IT folks will never accept this technology to deploy executables to a client unless we can just guarantee them and prove to them that there's no way that app's going to become corrupted, there's no way it's going to affect other apps on the machine.
Right.
And as a result, there were a lot of stumbling points people ran into trying to use it that kept them from using it in the first place.
Yeah.
So it became the developers wouldn't use it, so the IT guys never got a chance.
Right.
Now they fixed a lot of that in 3.5 and 3.5 SP1 that's coming up, fixes some more stuff. So it's continuing
great
to get a lot better. Unfortunately, they sort of missed their opportunity with a lot of people, and that affects both, you know, Windows Forms and, yeah, WPF.
So now we have another perception.
Yes, exactly.
So now we have the perception to get over that it's hard to deploy client,
right,
applications. Now we have to say, well, we know that there's another technology, but it was hard to use.
Right.
And we have to try. Yeah, I understand
and
that.
And now it's better, trust us kind of thing. And
yeah,
so it's like, you know, trying to win them over on a second try, which,
absolutely,
is always a tougher prospect.
So if team dynamics is one consideration, I probably not the main one that you should look at.
Right.
What are some things that you can talk about as to what are some of the things that should be considered when you're trying to choose which type of client technology to use?
Well, one that comes up a lot right now is kind of where your team is. It's tied back to team experience, but again, it's the more objective view of that, which,
okay,
is where is your team at right now? You know, if you're mired down in legacy technologies, VB6, C++, MFC, something like that, you have to say, where do you want to go? You're going to have to ramp up on something. You're starting a new project. You want new capabilities. You need a new client platform. So which one are you going to go to? Because you've got this broad spectrum of choices right now. So, you know, valid choices at this point, I would say, are primarily Windows Forms, WPF on the pure client, smart client side, ASP.NET, and AJAX is really just part of that now. And certainly Silverlight is becoming a big thing. Now, there's also all the sort of fringe variants there of SharePoint 2007, depending on,
okay,
the nature,
yeah,
of your web app, Windows Mobile, if you have mobility that you need for your app. But, you know, the core technologies that people are primarily trying to choose between are the ASP.NET, Silverlight, Windows Forms, and WPF.
Mm-hmm.
And what I kind of try to steer people on is if they have an existing base of people who are pretty good with Windows Forms, let's say they've already built some Windows Forms apps, then the other criteria you have to balance with that is what is the nature of the application that they're building.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's an internal corporate type of application, just kind of data entry, you're not trying to sell it as an ISV, you don't have end user consumers that are going to choose between the glitziest app, then Windows Forms is still a very valid technology.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And partly because the Windows Forms designers are really on version 4, whereas the WPF designers are on version 1.
Okay.
So from a pure productivity perspective, you know, if all that matters to your boss is schedule deadlines, shipping the app as quick as possible, you might be able to get it done quicker. You likely, from a pure UI perspective, you likely will get it done quicker,
mm-hmm,
if you're not trying to do anything fancy with Windows Forms.
Right.
I've had recent customers that I'm going through the pros and cons with them. That's exactly where I recommended they stay.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you're an ISV or there's any sort of competitive edge to will your project be accepted, funded, you know, it's not just public-facing consumer for sale apps here. I do some work in the government arena, and a lot of times there's different groups trying to build the same thing. And, you know, it's when the general comes to look at the application, if he sees shiny, glitzy things and goes, ooh, pretty, you know, that's the one that's going to get funded.
Right.
So if there's any form of that competitive aspect of what's going to get funded, then that eye candy of WPF or Silverlight can really make a difference there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then Silverlight definitely blurs the lines, because now you have a web-based technology that can achieve the same kind of rich interactivity, you know, more of a client stateful application that's running on in the client space, instead of having to ship the UI back and forth like right. you do with a traditional web app.
Yeah, Silverlight really does kind of muddy the water a bit when you're talking about client. Because as I told you before we started the interview, I kind of started my career building desktop software,
right.
And I've always had an attachment to that, and when off to the web because that was where everybody was, and I could. But I always felt the trade-offs. I always knew that they were there. And now Silverlight almost comes in and gives me a way to do all that stuff I did on the desktop to a certain degree. But now I can deploy it
right
out over multiple platforms.
Right.
So
yeah, and I totally agree. I mean, you know, if you design for ClickOnce deployment with either WPF or Windows Forms, and you don't have a extremely restrictive deployment environment, ClickOnce actually, especially with .NET 3.5 and later, ClickOnce will actually give you the same simplicity of deployment as a web app, I would argue. But there are certainly fringe cases. A fellow regional director, Bill Evian, his company invested heavily in trying to make ClickOnce work, but they just ran into a few fringe aspects, but they were things that were just hard requirements for them. Mm-hmm. They needed to put shortcuts on the desktop. They needed this, and so, you know, they found that that was restrictive. So Silverlight does sort of solve that in that it is a pure web delivery mechanism.
Right.
And it takes away, you know, one of the most challenging aspects I found, because I was similar where I've done both client. I've been mostly client-focused the last few years, but prior to that, I was primarily web-focused in ASP.NET. And so I can speak from experience in both spaces. And the fact is, even if you're good at both technologies, it's just hard to manage state in a web-based application, in a pure, you know, ASP.NET style application. Silverlight solves that aspect, because it really is a client application running in the browser on the client machine. It can be as stateful as it needs to in that memory space, and just go out over the web to get the data, you know, the changing data it needs from back-end services.
Yeah, that was always one of my favorite aspects, was the occasionally connected aspect of being able to build a desktop application.
Right.
So they actually have a TLA now. It's OCA, occasionally connected applications.
Yeah.
And that was the thing is especially on when mobile computing became so much more, you know, walking around with laptops and things
right.
like that. You know, that if you think about it, 10 years ago, laptops were still like 45 pounds.
Sure.
And I mean, you know, they're extremely heavy. And so people tended to use the desktop. And then if I were just, that was where I first started getting involved with this.
Right.
And it was that occasionally connected aspect that really drew me to that. But Silverlight.
Yes.
Actually kind of addresses that.
Well,
it's
to a
still
degree.
A connected application, but there are certain capabilities to be able to cache things locally and operate on things locally.
Right.
So it's not a pure solution for that particular problem, but it's certainly more compelling than a lot of other stuff that we've seen in recent
right.
past.
And it's all in how you design it too. I mean, if you design it to be kind of a standalone, you know, your Silverlight is your app, your window, and you trade out content and alter the screen within that, then it's pretty much like a client app.
Yeah.
But as soon as you have navigation between different XAML pages and things like that, then you're back at the mercy of the browser and the network, and all it takes is a network burp and your UI just went away.
So you
have to keep that aspect in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, another key consideration, getting back to sort of where you are skills-based and where you want to be, that I try to remind people is the fact that your skills reuse between WPF and Silverlight should be a factor.
Absolutely.
If there's any chance that you need to do both, and very often I think people rule out doing both because they're used to their old architectures where things were all tightly woven into the forms and the views, and
right.
there was no chance of reuse across different UI front ends. You know, with proper architecture, the UI should be very thin in the first place. You should be able to slap a different technology UI on the front of it and address, you know, broader reach scenarios and closer reach scenarios. So
yeah.
unfortunately, I see that very often too, where you know, a company will say, okay, you know, 80% of our users are internal, you know, working on our workstations. We want them to be as functional as possible. Here's the full set of requirements. And then they go, oh, but, you know, once in a while we want to let them work from home. So we're going to go with a web-based technology so that that makes that easy. And it's like, well, then you're dumbing it down for, you know, 80% of the work that's being done.
Throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that.
So, you know, with some good architecture and the fact that you can really leverage your skills and to a fairly large degree your code, at least the declarative markup of what do your UIs look like, you can reuse that XAML across WPF and Silverlight. Mm-hmm. And you definitely reuse the skills of how you go about composing that application.
Yeah.
So that is kind of a nice space to aim for, to say, okay, you know, if we're primarily smart client, if we aim for WPF, it would be very easy for us to create a Silverlight version that has broader reach that we can put out there. And it may not be 100% of the functionality, but it's that functionality we want to expose further.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's one of the things that's been so intriguing to me about XAML. So WPF and Silverlight, since I, you know, we first started learning about them, was the fact that XAML really does almost enforce a separation of client and business.
It tries to.
It's still possible, but it's nowhere near as easy to start bearing a lot of business logic in your presentation tier when you're using XAML. Do you agree?
Right. Yes. My only hesitation there is that, you know, for a lot of things, specifically if you're hooking up event handlers, you have to put those in the code behind.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you have code behind there, there's the tendency
there's
to put everything
yeah.
in the code behind,
that's
and
true.
You're right back to the monolithic, you know, window that is makes things non-separable and hard to maintain.
Right.
But definitely the way WPF supports the separation with XAML and some of the mechanisms, if they're leveraged correctly in WPF, and this applies to Silverlight as well with data binding, you can basically, you know, kind of push things out to, there's a pattern out there called a view model that people are adopting. It's really the same as presentation model, which has been documented by Martin Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically saying, get all that code out away from your UI, just expose properties for the things that the UI needs to know about, and then the data binding mechanisms of WPF and Silverlight let you just kind of point to those things and suck the data into the form. You can kind of get more separation there, get away from the code behind, and hopefully, you know, avoid putting all that intertangled stuff into your code behind.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. Okay. So WinForm versus WPF, okay? So we were, you know, you had some great points about this earlier. One of the things that when I talk to folks that I run into is they say, well, I think you were talking about, you know, the WinForms, if you just need to get something up quick because
right.
the tooling is there, you know, it's a more mature technology than WPF. Completely agree. One of the things that I see people hesitating about WPF is, first of all, it's got a rather intimidating object model. It's very rich. XAML can look very scary to you if you haven't done a lot of web design and are not familiar with a lot of doing a lot of markup. Suddenly your whole UI is markup.
Right.
What are some things that people can do to maybe overcome that fear? What are some things, are there primers available that will be able to help people move, you know, say, okay, well, I think I might go to Silverlight in the future, so I really do want to do this as WPF.
Right.
What can I do to get my hands around that?
You know, there's a set of about four really good books for getting started with WPF and for Silverlight as well on the basics, specifically on what you keyed on, that kind of discomfort with XAML and the whole basic programming model. So Adam Nathan's book, WPF Unleashed, Chris Anderson's book, Essential WPF, Chris Sell's book, Programming WPF, and those are the three that always jump to mind. I said four, but I forget.
Okay.
Well, on the Silverlight side, Silverlight Unleashed, also by Adam Nathan.
Mm-hmm.
They do a really good job for the, you know, brand new to WPF, trying to figure out what is this programming model and what are all the new constructs there. So those are a good starting place.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's really lacking right now for WPF is the next step beyond that. There's not a lot of intermediate to advanced books out there.
I see.
Because there's not a lot of intermediate to advanced people. The other thing for people to definitely be aware of is it's not an all or nothing prospect. So the talk I'm giving
Absolutely.
In about an hour is that there's a very nice interop story between Windows Forms and WPF. So one way to kind of get your feet wet, like you said, is if you've got an existing Windows Forms app, you don't have to rewrite the entire thing to start adopting WPF. You can say, you know what, here's some data that we were presenting in a grid before, but we can come up with a better visualization of this data if we were able to easily draw this in 2D space in some way. well, WPF's very good at that kind of thing. So you can just write a WPF control, plunk that into your Windows Forms app, literally in four lines of code, and now you can do right. little bits and pieces in WPF while you get comfortable with the programming model until that next big project where you're going to start from scratch and write
start
the whole thing
forward.
In WPF.
So this is a huge thing I hear all the time about Silverlight.
Right.
We have so much investment in Flash. We can't throw away all the Flash to go to Silverlight.
Right.
But then it's a good thing you don't have to,
right?
Because you can, Flash and Silverlight will run on the same page together. I mean,
right.
it's really, as long as you have the plugins, they'll both work. Use Silverlight where it makes sense to use it,
exactly.
And that's use WPF where it makes sense to use it, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So what about Prism? We've kind of heard about this for a while. What can you tell us about that?
Okay, Prism is a project that the Patterns and Practices group from Microsoft has been working on. It's sort of falls out of, but I don't want to draw too close of analogies there because there's some baggage associated. There's a thing called the Composite UI Application Block.
Yeah.
And something that sort of wraps that, and shortened name for that is CAB. On top of CAB is something called the Smart Client Software Factory, which just made CAB easier to use is the easiest way to think about it. So the motivations for those was that, you know, big, complex UI applications, smart client applications, you don't want to build it as one big monolithic project.
Mm-hmm.
Everything gets all interwoven. It's hard to maintain. You can't split the work across multiple teams if you want to. So it basically laid down some architectural guidance for how to address that, how to make things more modular, how to decouple the modules, and but still let those modules come together into a single application
right.
that could be interactive and seem like a single app to the user. So CAB addressed that for the Windows Form space. There was an evolution of that where they introduced, using this interop stuff I just talked about, the ability to plug WPF views into a CAB app. But CAB had some aspects that it was all or nothing. You pretty much had to start from ground zero building a CAB app. You couldn't really introduce it into an existing app.
Mm-hmm.
So Prism is basically saying, okay, we learned some lessons from what was good and what was bad about CAB. The same motivations are there for building a complex WPF app, that you want to keep things as decoupled as possible, you want to split the work across teams and limit the complexity. So Prism's the code name, by the way. We're still settling on an official name.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's going to be Composite Application Guidance,
mm-hmm.
And the specific libraries that ship will be Composite Application Libraries. Everyone's still referring to it as Prism for now.
Prism, yep.
But it's basically some documentation. It's some libraries that provide framework-ish code. It's not a full-blown framework, but it's basically a bunch of helper classes and base classes and services and stuff you can use for decoupled publish-subscribe eventing, commands that go beyond the routed commands that are in WPF, so you have more decoupled commands and address different commanding scenarios you can't do with the built-in WPF commands.
Okay.
The ability to compose your UI, basically define little pieces of your UI as views outside in libraries, bring those libraries together through some modular loading we have, both dynamic and static modular loading, and plug those in to a UI that the UI itself can be fairly agnostic about what the views are that are being plugged into it. And there's probably a few other aspects I'm forgetting off the
okay.
top of my head, but
okay.
those are some of the core features that we're providing there.
Fantastic. And that's going to be available soon, I understand.
Yes. So there's already bi-weekly drops out there we've been putting out, and the official release date's about 2 weeks away.
About 2 weeks away.
Yeah, end
okay.
of June, basically.
Well, I think the key takeaway is that's going to be a great primer for helping people get started with WPF.
Yep.
And maybe get over some of the fear they have. And I, again, the key thing is, I was just talking to Glenn Block about this yesterday,
mm-hmm.
the fact that, they heard the feedback.
Right.
Don't give me these enormous
exactly.
Automation packages and things like that. What I really want is you to show me how to do it in pieces, small, sliceable, digestible
yep.
chunks I can implement and build an application.
Yep,
with.
And each one of those things I mentioned, the modular loading, the view composition, the eventing, the commanding, you can use any one, mix and match, use any one of those, and you're not stuck with a all or nothing like you had with CAB.
All right, great stuff. Best of luck to you tomorrow.
All right.
Probably be a long week for you, but I think it's a long week for everyone here at TechEd.
It's a lot of fun, though.
Brian, thanks so much for joining
me
today. I appreciate it. So, thank you very much for tuning in today. I appreciate it. This is Denny Boynton signing off from the Fishbowl. It's been a great week. I hope you've enjoyed it. Until next time, we'll see you on our cast. Bye now.